Okay, so last week, I'm going to need to do a quick recap of it. Last week is the essential background to this week. Last week, we opened with the Gemara in Yevamot, which tells us that Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. B'kulam metu b'perek echad, they all died in a single period. Mipnei shelo nahagu kavod ze leze, because they didn't accord honor to one another. It's short, cryptic. We're not told what happened. We're not told what that means. There are theories about them dying in the Bar Kokhba revolts, which I find to be very uncompelling. If the Gemara wanted to tell us that, they would have told us that. What does it mean? They didn't honor one another. So what we're going to try and do, and it's a very long way to doing it, but we're going to try and get something of a sense of the world of that Bet Midrash. What was it like in Rabbi Akiva's Bet Midrash that possibly could have created such an atmosphere? And what we did was we looked at both Rabbi Akiva, but before him at Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is always short for Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is one of the top, maybe the top students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the man who is there at 0 hour, who is the bridge between the destruction of the temple and the Judaism which follows afterwards, going way back to beginning of semester. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would describe Rabbi Eliezer as a bor sid she'eno ma'abed tipa. He is a cemented cistern who doesn't lose a drop. His knowledge is enormous. Once he's heard something, he never forgets it. It stays there within him. But the water doesn't move. The water is not overflowing. It's not Ma'ayan Hamit Gaber, like one of the other students is described as. It sits there. Once, tells us the Gemara in Masechet Sukkah, Daf Kaf Chet Amud Aleph, Rabbi Eliezer was in the Galil. And presumably it was Sukkot time, because the people there asked him 30 questions about Hilchot Sukkah. And he said to them, 12 shamati, 18 lo shamati. I've heard the answer to 12 of them, I haven't heard the answer to 18 of them. And the people there say, aren't you the Gadol Hador? Aren't you Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's top student? Perhaps you can put one thing together and see if one thing is similar to another thing. And he responds furiously with a long speech. But the thing that he says at the beginning of the speech and at the end of the speech is, Lo'olam lo amarti davar shelo shamati mipi rabotai. I have never said anything that I did not hear from one of my teachers. If my teachers didn't say it, I would not repeat it. Rabbi Eliezer, he doesn't just remember everything he's heard, but also the flip side of that is true. He is completely averse, allergic to the idea of chidush. Chidush, he cannot say. He cannot say something new. A, it might be wrong. B, it just doesn't have the stamp. Here's an awesome Israeli word, the gushpanka, the authoritative stamp of tradition. If it's not Masorah, if it hasn't been passed down, he doesn't want to have anything to do with it. That is Rabbi Eliezer. How different Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who, well known, did not come to Torah until the age of 40. I mean, if we take the Gemara seriously, he didn't just not know Torah. He was literally illiterate. He didn't get away from my burnt ends. Don't even think about it, fly. Is it not enough that someone takes my fries? Yeah. Do we ever find out who that was? They denied it. No. Pulsa Dinura. Look up Pulsa Dinura. That's what's going to happen. Okay. Rabbi Akiva is very different from Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva does not have any access to Torah until the age of 40. He's never going to know anything like as much as Rabbi Eliezer. His strength is going to lie somewhere else. One of the stories of Rabbi Akiva's early days describes him, shepherd, looking at the water flowing in the stream, and he sees that there's an indent in the rock, and he says, Michikek Evenzu, who made this indent? And the people say it's the water which is always falling on the rock. Dan Rabbi Akiva Kalvachomir La'atzmo. Rabbi Akiva makes a Kalvachomir. Ma rach. Just as the soft makes an impression on the hard, the soft water makes an impression on the hard rock, Divrei Torah shekashin kabarzel, words of Torah which are as hard as iron. There's a lot to say about that imagery, but that's what he says. Al achat kama v'kama, how much more so shechakaku et libi, that they will make an impression upon my heart, shehi basar v'dam, which is just soft flesh and blood. Miad chazar hu ubono etzel malamdei tinokot, he and his son go and sit with a kindergarten teacher, as it were, and they go and learn aleph bet. All I want to point out from that source is Rabbi Akiva doesn't know anything. He's never learnt anything. He doesn't know aleph bet, but dan kal v'chomer batzmo. He can already make a kal v'chomer. The idea of creativity, the idea which is actually so much, as you all know, at the heart of what it means to learn Gemara. What is a kal v'chomer? To look at one case and see something there that you can then apply with certainty to another case. It is literally the opposite of what Rabbi Eliezer does. Rabbi Eliezer, who refuses to say anything that one of his teachers hasn't said, he would never make a kal v'chomer. A kal v'chomer seems to be the opposite of that approach. Rabbi Akiva, who doesn't know anything, he's able to make the kal v'chomer. He has got that creativity in him. We saw many, many sources along these lines, these fascinating ways in which they describe their learning approach. Rabbi Eliezer says, if all of the earth and the skies were megillot, were scrolls, all of the water was ink, and all of the people in the world were scribes, lo maspikin lichtov kol Torah shelamadati. They would not be able to write all of the Torah that I know. The amount that Rabbi Eliezer knows is just enormous. Rabbi Akiva says, this is a midrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, Rabbi Akiva says, Ein bi koach lomar kamo she'amru rabotai. I don't have the strength to say what my teachers have said. I don't know as much about them. I've got a different strength. What am I like? My approach? Kamareach be'etrog. Like someone who smells an etrog. Hamareach neheneh, the person who smells it, enjoys it. V'ha'etrog lo chasel. But the etrog isn't then lacking. You haven't taken away smell from the etrog. Now, of course, Sarah Quintas interrupted me and said, yes, you actually do take away smell from something when Sarah's not able to be here, unfortunately, tonight. But in her schut, we should say that she would say that. But Rabbi Akiva didn't think that. What is my approach like? Kamadlik miner l'ner, like someone who takes one candle and lights from it another candle. That's what my approach is. And the way in which it's a very fascinating source, that. But the way in which we interpreted that was Rabbi Eliezer's approach. He knows so much, but it's quantitative. It's data. It's a certain amount. Yakira, I think this was your point last week.
I wasn't here last week.
Wow, that's weird.
But I'm honored. Okay.
Once he's taught it to someone, it's almost as if he's given it away to someone. Raquel, your point? Okay, there you go. There you go.
It's
a parlance, exactly. Rabbi Akiva, by contrast, it's qualitative. It's a style. It's a methodology. It's not necessarily based on the amount of data, of things that he knows. Okay, this is the brief recap of last week. These sources are everywhere, by the way. Okay, one more quick one. Mishnah in Avot. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Mesora Sayag LaTorah. Tradition is a fence for the Torah. Tradition tells us what you can say, what is the area which you can legitimately say within Jewish thought, discussion, halakha, whatever it is. And what, once you pass that boundary, sure, you can say it, but it's no longer part of what we call Jewish discourse. That's what Masorah is. Masorah bounds the outer limits, and within that, then there is great freedom and creativity to the heights and to the depths. What would Rabbi Eliezer say back to that source? He'd say, Chas v'shalom, kvira. Masorah isn't sayag l'Torah. Tradition isn't a fence for the Torah. Masorah hi Torah. Masorah is the Torah itself. If there is no, if it's not been passed down, if we haven't received it, then it does not count as Torah. All right. That is the 9 minutes and 35 seconds recap of last week's shiur. Now, at a certain point, you begin to wonder to yourself, this huge disagreement between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer. It's taking place at a very significant juncture in Jewish history, right? Let's go back to all the things we've looked at this semester, all of this course. When I say this is Chazal, that's actually a little bit misleading. Really, this is the generations during and shortly after, during and shortly after the destruction of the temple. There's a major question. Go back to the piece that we did around Yom HaShoah. Remember those crazy sources about the people who say, you know, we shouldn't have children, it's over, right? And Rabbi Yoshua is the one who counsels them. People remember? That's always like, it's just not clear what direction Judaism is going to go in. And so you ask yourself, these sources, these very great differences between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, are they simply just different teaching styles? There are different teaching styles today. Or does it actually reflect something more fundamental? Is there a different approach to how to learn Torah? Something more fundamental, a difference between the two of them? The sheet that you should all have says heavenly Torah and earthly Torah at the top. People got that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Until now, Ad Kan, what I've said is pretty well known. Binyamin Lau writes it in his book, The Sages. A man called Rabbi David Silverberg has got an excellent piece on it. The next stage, if I could humbly say, my chidush. Two midrashim, which we're going to see are pretty similar to one another. One is about Rabbi Akiva, one is about Rabbi Eliezer. And I think these midrashim are going to take us to the next level. The first is a Gemara in Masechet Menachot, Daf Kaftet Amud Bet. This is an important, well-known Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. B'shash Ala Moshe L'Marom. At the time when Moshe went up on high, Matzala Kadosh Baruch Hu Kosher K'tarim Lo'otiyot. He found Hashem attaching crowns to the letters. Amar Lo, he said to him, Mi Ma'akevet Yadecha. Hashem, who is holding back your hand? Amar lo. Hashem said, Sadik echad, yesh, besof kama dorot. There's going to be a righteous man at the end of several generations. Va'akiva ben Yosef shemo. His name is Akiva, son of Yosef. V'hu yidrosh kol kotz v'kotz tilin v'tilin shel halachot. He is going to expound. He's going to understand every, you say in English, although I never hear anyone say it in English, every jot and tittle of halacha. The dot of every I, the cross of every T, he's going to find some reading, some meaning in it. And Moshe says, Ribono shel olam, yesh lecha adam kazeh v'ata noten Torah al yadi. You've got a man like this and you give the Torah through me. Hashem says, shtok, be quiet, kachala. This is what I've seen. And then he says, Herehuli, please, Moshe says, let me see him. Hashem says, okay. He steps into Hashem's time machine. Chazor la'acharecha. Turn around. Halach v'yashav b'sof shmone shuot. Moshe goes and sits at the back of the classroom. Ve'lo hayayode ma'hen omrim. And he doesn't understand what they are talking about. Moshe Rabbeinu, right? A Rabban shel kol ha-Nevi'im, who Rambam will codify as one of the principles of faith, not just that he was the prophet, but he was the prophet with a higher level of prophecy than anyone else, does not understand what's going on in Rabbi Akiva's classroom. Unsurprisingly, Tashash Kocho, he feels very weak. When he gets to a certain point in the conversation, Amru lo talmidav, his students say to him, Rebbe, minayin lacha, that point you just made, Rabbi Akiva, where did you get it from? Amar lahen, he says to them, halach la Moshe Mesinai. It's a tradition, it's a halacha we have from Moshe on Har Sinai. Halach la Moshe Mesinai is a particular thing. Certain things we have are traditions. The Torah doesn't say anywhere that tefillin should be black and square. However, halach la Moshe Mesinai, the tradition that we have. So the students don't understand something. Where does he get that from? Rabbi Akiva says, halach la Moshe Mesinai. Nityashva Dato. Moshe feels better. Lots to say about this source, right? I've actually cut it off at the halfway mark. The source carries on. It carries on in just as crazy a way as, or rather in a very different direction, but still very intense. It's very important, the second half, but we're going to do it for another time. This Gemara is so important that when Rav Moshe Feinstein writes a literally one-page introduction to all of Igrot Moshe, right, his Hakdama, he doesn't write an introduction in every volume, he only writes an introduction in Chelek Aleph, and it's only a one-page introduction, he puts his focus upon this Gemara. It's a beautiful piece, happy to learn it with people anytime. There's so much to say about this piece. Go on, Yakira.
I've learned this before, and to me it always, I understand why it's powerful, but and like why it shows the importance of tradition, but to me it also is like, if Moshe doesn't know what's going on, and then you say it's Halacha of Moshe Nisinai, doesn't that sort of like invalidate that statement in the first place?
Shouldn't he have known the...
Yeah, like if it's literally Halacha of Moshe Nisinai.
That's a great question. It's interesting to me that you see this as being a source about tradition. I mean, Halacha L'Moshe Nisinai is obviously mentioned, but there's a lot of other things mentioned. Let me give the following way I love of explaining it. This is what an old colleague of mine, someone who gave me my start really in Jewish education in London, Rabbi Dr. Raphael Zaram in London. He is the head of LSJS, London School of Jewish Studies, where I first taught this. He gave the following explanation. Now, Rafi's doctorate is in, I think, in astrophysics, substantial area that I wouldn't understand anything about. So that explains something of his mashup. Isaac Newton, okay, comes back down to Earth after several hundred years of being dead. And he finds himself in NASA headquarters. And he's there in the Chadar Ochel at NASA, the canteen. And he's invisible. And he's at a table with one of NASA's senior scientists and his assistant. And he doesn't understand what they're talking about. Tashash kocho. He feels weak. He feels sick. Isaac Newton, right? To this day, centuries after he left, people know his name. One of the all-time giants of science has got no idea what this conversation in the NASA lunchtime canteen is going on. Kevon shehigi al davar echad amar lo Rabbi minayin lecha. When they got to a certain point in the conversation, over their lunch, discussing whatever their NASA project they're discussing, the assistant says, I don't understand, where did you get that point from you just made? Amar lo, says the senior NASA scientist, simple, Newton's second rule of physics. Right? Is that what it's even called? Showing my, yeah? No? What's it called?
Second law.
Either way.
Nityashva
dato. Isaac Newton feels better, right? He understands that the conversation going on, which is of course so far removed from anything that he was, is nevertheless the logical continuation, the spooling out, the development of the principle which he discovered. To put this in a crazier light, this is, I think, actually more extreme. Amar Rabbi Acha, Dvarim shelo niglu leMoshe miSinai niglu leRabbi Akiva veChaverav. That's wild, that one. That's to put it further. Things that Moshe was not revealed to on Har Sinai were revealed to Rabbi Akiva and his people. Let me just finish off with this point. Do people see the connection between this Rabbi Akiva here and what we've discussed until now? Rabbi Akiva is the man of creativity. Rabbi Akiva is the man who has got a Kal v'Chomer in his bones before he's even able to read Aleph Bet. Rabbi Akiva, in one of the sources we saw last week, with Nehemiah HaAmsoni, the man who had a theory for what every single word, every single time the word et appears in the Torah, he's got a theory as to what it means, and then he gets to one pasuk and he gives it up because he can't find a meaning. Rabbi Akiva is the person who finds meaning in that. Rabbi Akiva is always the one who can find something else. And here we have it not just as, oh, he's a brilliant creative mind, he even understands more than Moshe.
and I don't want to backtrack at all, but I would say that the difference between like the Isaac Newton thing and the Halakha L'Moshe Mitzinai is that we believe that, like, when we say that Halakha L'Moshe Mitzinai, like, it actually happened in that way, whereas like the Isaac Newton stuff is like building upon like principles of physics that he discovered. And like obviously it's not going to be a perfect, it's not meant to be like a perfect translation of like this idea, but I still don't understand how like
how the phrase halachah
of the phrase in itself. Like,
what halachah l'moshe mitzinai actually means is not a simple thing. Meaning it's, I mean, I guess I presented it as a simple thing. There are tefillin are square and black, but there's substantial debate around it, which I don't have at the tip of my fingertips in order to give you thing, but. It's clearly the function of Halakha L'Moshe Mitzinai in this story is what makes Moshe realize that A, this is authentic, B, it's a logical extension or understanding of where he has come from, but at the same time, I see the real weight of this as being that Moshe doesn't understand and there is something new there. We've got so much to do, so I don't want to take lots of thoughts on this, but go on, Yaakov.
I was going to say sort of the opposite of what Yukira was saying. That by Isaac Newton, when someone says like Newton's second law of physics or something Newtonian physics, we are fairly certain that that is exactly what Isaac Newton said. When someone says Torah Moshe Mitzinai, we say that because we believe it. But like, I think any rabbi will say that we can't know for sure that is actually Torah Moshe Mitzinai.
You mean that tradition?
Correct. I mean, that particular halacha was actually
like
given.
I came across a piece of Rav Sadigan a couple of years ago, which claims that all of the Mishnah was given on Har Sinai, the Mishnah in itself.
I think it's also very, very interesting how you're saying that Moshe, right? You're bringing the significance of Moshe from Rambam, right? Giving like in the, and then we're giving Rabbi Akiva, right? Such. Significance because of his understanding every single et in the Torah, where that's sort of what people do to Rambam, understanding every single word in the Rambam.
Nice. Okay, this Gemara which we've just looked at is well known. Yakira has seen it before. I wanna show a source which I'm guessing most of you have not seen it. I'd certainly never seen it before. I was putting this together, and when I saw it blew me away. Not simply because of itself, but because of what it does to the one that we've just seen. Rabbi Acha. Remember Rabbi Acha? Rabbi Acha's in the previous source, right? Clearly he was interested in this stuff. Rabbi Acha, b'shem Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. B'sha'a she'ala Moshe l'shamayim. At the time when Moshe went up to the heavens to receive the Torah. Shamach kolo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He heard Hashem's voice. Hashem was learning the sugya. Yoshev v'osek b'parashat Parah. Hashem was learning the topic of Parah Aduma. V'omer, and Hashem was saying, Halacha b'shem omrim Rabbi Eliezer. The halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Moshe lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Said Moshe to Hashem, Ribon ha'olamim, master of the universe, ha'elyonim v'atachtonim birshutecha. The upper worlds, the lower worlds, you command them. V'ata yoshev v'omer halacha mishmo shel basar v'dam. And you're saying the halacha is like the person of flesh and blood? Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Moshe, tzadik echad atid la'amod ba'olami. In the future, a righteous one will arise in my world. Va'atid liftoach parashat para, and he will open up this topic, and he will say, Rabbi Eliezer omer, egla bat shnata, para bat shtayim, what's the difference between a calf and a cow, one year, 2 years, this is the halacha. Amar lefanav, Moshe says, ribon ha'olamim. Master of the universe, Yehi Ratzon Milfanecha, may it be your will, Sheyetze Michaltzei, this one, that he will be one of my descendants. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, as you will it, Shehu Michaltzecha, he will be one of your descendants. This is how you write in Midrash, look at this. Hashem HaEchad Eliezer, Moshe has two children, two sons, Hashem HaEchad Gershon, Hashem Ha'achad Eliezer, Hashem Oto HaMeyuchad Eliezer. And the name of that righteous, unique individual is Rabbi Eliezer. See the brilliance of this? Right? We've seen this once before. If people remember when we did the Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, Rabbi Akiva piece, right? Two Midrashim. which seem to be very similar to one another. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai leaves Yerushalayim, Rabbi Akiva leaves Yerushalayim. The people who are with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai cry, people who are with Rabbi Akiva cry. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai gives them comfort, Rabbi Akiva gives them comfort. But these parallels are only there to draw attention to the great difference between the two. In these cases, Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, Moshe goes up to Har Sinai. Moshe finds Hashem doing something which surprises them, Moshe finds Hashem doing something surprising. One is to do with Rabbi Akiva, one is to do with Rabbi Eliezer. All of that drawing attention to the difference. Moshe feels sick when he sees Rabbi Akiva. He doesn't understand the Torah which is taking place in the Beit Midrash. Eventually he's comforted by Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, but fundamentally he doesn't understand what is taking place there. By contrast, Moshe sees Rabbi Eliezer, that's me. That's who I want. That's my son. Right? This is the Torah that I understand. I hope you see that this is like, this takes the sort of like the educational methodology disagreement. Max, it's quite cool. Breaking Bad right here, right?
They're thinking it the whole time.
I thought it right at the start. The educational methodology between conservatism versus chiddush, between knowing everything that your teachers ever said but not wanting to say anything new, versus the huge creativity of Rabbi Akiva, you see these paired with one another. Here's how I like to think about it. We are decades after Churban HaBayit. The center has fallen out of the Jewish world. What does it look like now? Rabbi Eliezer runs back to Har Sinai. Rabbi Eliezer says, everything that has been broken, we need to go back to Har Sinai. Rabbi Akiva says, there's no going back to the world that was. We've got to run forward. We're going to take what we've got, we're going to take what we remember, we're going to take what we can do, and we're going to not just rely on everything that we've only ever heard, we're going to be creative, we're going to move forward. And if this is the case, then they can't live together. If it's just a difference in terms of methodology, beseder, you want to learn like that way, go that way. You want to learn like that way, go to that Beit Midrash. But if these are fundamentally different opinions about what direction Judaism is going to take, then they actually have to clash with one another. That clash is the background to the most famous story in all of the Talmud. It's the most famous story, like if someone goes to one introductory, like impress me class on Gemara, this is the story that they'll see. But most, all the time, this background isn't given. That story is Tanur Shel Achnai, the oven of Achnai. Just a little disclaimer, okay? This is like a five-part series, which I'm smooshing into two. You guys have got lots of places to be and lots of stuff to study. You've got to leave, don't worry. I'm gonna go for it, okay? Tell me when it's time to say Kriyat Shema in the morning. Okay, there's some quality stuff here that is worth it. I'm going to say like you've got to leave, like go for it. Zero offense taken. You've got to study, but I'm going to do it relatively fast, right? But I want to share this stuff with you.
Right,
no, I never said this is going to be a short. Actually, I did say to Michael 45 minutes here. Okay. I guess maybe quick pause before we get to the Oven of Achnai. Thoughts at this point? Michal, you had your hand up.
Well, the thing I was going to say, and I think you kind of answered it, I just think it's interesting that like a lot of the personality that you spoke about last week about how Eliezer like doesn't want to like give a shot, a halacha about and he doesn't like necessarily know. Mm-hmm. Like he didn't want to give all those like 18 or 12 about whatever
yep.
it was. So it's like interesting that here, like specifically in this case, it's like the halacha is like conforms to Eliezer, but like what did he like Rabbi Eliezer like the student of this because he's not.
Where did he get it from?
Himself. So I think it's interesting that like specifically Moshe's like, oh, I want that person, like mm-hmm. the one who just like verbatim says like what his teacher said, like if you can, I think this
right.
is more about so we're like going all the way
yeah.
back to Moshe. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. This is Rabbi Eliezer represents Har Sinai.
Right.
Yeah. Max?
Just to clarify, you say when we're getting to the oven of Oppenheimer, saying these two Midrashim are like background context to this?
No, I mean,
the general
thing. Yeah. Rabbi Eliezer is going to be the central character of the Oven of Achanai. He is going to be the one who everybody disagrees with, who Shamayim is going to say the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Why are you disagreeing with him? And Rabbi Yehoshua, who is also part of the story, but who's basically the same as Rabbi Akiva, is going to say, Lo b'shamayim hi. The Torah is not in heaven. You cannot do this.
How many examples are there of like Rabbi Eliezer coming into this like particular kind of conflict with other rabbis, Rabbi Akiva or other rabbis? Are there like many examples all throughout the Talmud?
What do you mean by this particular?
Well, I mean this whole conflict that this shir is based on of these different viewpoints of Judaism. Are these the examples that you have brought up? Are these the examples, or these are just some handpicked examples, but you can read it throughout the entire Talmud?
Yeah, you really can. Now, pardon me. It's not really until you string them together that you realize this is like of such great momentum. I don't know. Eshet Yafet Torah, right? The woman who is brought back from war. And the Torah says, like, puts very sort of strict guidelines. You're not allowed, no, she's not allowed to be taken into this conquering home until certain things have happened. One is until she cries for her parents. Okay, what does that mean, crying for her parents? Says Rabbi Akiva, it means crying for her parents. Right? That's what it is. Says Rabbi Eliezer, it means crying for her parents. Says Rabbi Akiva, Avodah Zarah. Right? She's missing her gods from the land of which she was a part of. So, I mean, you see all these points, sort of the Rabbi Akiva sort of like push for creativity, the Rabbi Eliezer sort of simple, straightforward, then often it then connects up with tradition versus Chiddush. Tzivia?
I don't want to get ahead of myself, so I guess I'll just frame it in terms of comparing the two Midrashot with each other. We also spoke a little bit about this on Shabbos in terms of like Eliyahu and his, you know, somewhat godliness.
So he's also going to come and play a role.
Ooh. Oh yeah, that's true, and that's where he goes. But anyway, so just to connect back, so when we're comparing Rabbi Eliezer to Moshe, is there almost, would you also say not only, you know, this like very by the book kind of standard, but also this almost like God-like quality of like being so holy, so above this world?
Well, we're going to see that sort of very explicitly in the following Gemara. But I mean, there's no better example of that than that's about to come.
How would you say that plays out in the previous Midrash show? Or is it more just like that was showing the by the book aspect?
Which bit?
The we just did, like the previous Midrash.
Well, that Moshe sees Rabbi Eliezer.
Right.
And, I mean, again, the power of the Midrash really comes up when you pair it with the other one. He sees Rabbi Akiva and he feels sick. He doesn't understand what's going on. He sees Rabbi Eliezer and that's him. I mean, either Rabbi Eliezer is his son, or better still, he is Moshe in that sense.
Do you think that the Midrash, if that specific Midrash explicitly shows why Moshe feels that connection?
To tell the truth, I'm very interested if anyone's got any idea. I don't understand what Para Aduma is doing there. Like, why specifically Para Aduma?
Maybe that's like the Torah aspect.
That's a classic example of a book because we don't know the reason for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. Yeah, fair mode.
Right, which plays into like the, it had to be tradition.
Yeah, fair. Okay, great.
Ooh, I like
great.
That.
Excellent. Very good. Uh-huh.
I think Rabbi Gamliel comes up in the following story, but just think in general. First question that comes, is this Rabbi Eliezer? The person that said, well, Rabbi Gamliel, that's a different person.
That's Rabbi Elazar.
That's what I thought.
Yes. No,
so,
no Yud, different person.
So, I remember learning one time that, like, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Akiva also had, like, very, like, a contrasted, I guess, leadership style. Like, Rabbi Akiva was, like, very forward-thinking and, like, I don't know, always, like,
yeah.
Trying to like,
Rabbi Gamliel he'll be the thing that we don't give. That's Brachot Kaf Zayin. That's a very important long story, which is very, very worthwhile for it. All right, are we ready to jump into the biggest story of all? Okay, we've done sufficient backdrop for it.
The last time I ran these together, I learned them in the opposite order. Like the first source he gave.
Interesting. You're good. So we'll do this relatively quickly because Oh, Nathaniel's waving at us.
Okay. I've no idea how long you've been waving, Nathaniel. Okay. Hello, let me turn up your volume. What's up, Nathaniel? Well, Tanur Shalachnai is an argument about a particular raven. And that's what they're arguing about. And the heavenly voice is going to say the halacha is always like him. But specifically, it's talking about in this case. Okay, let's look at Tanur Shalachnai. We'll do it very, very quickly. But we'll do it because, you know, there's actually, you can do a huge amount on this source. And really, one of the best pieces, many great pieces written. One of the best is by NYU professor Jeffrey Rubinstein. In his book Stories of the Babylonian Talmud, his piece on this is really excellent. Okay, so what is the story of the oven of Achnai? An oven, a broken oven, which they then put back together with sand. Rabbi Eliezer Matahir v'chachamim matmein. Rabbi Eliezer says it's pure, the sages say it's impure. V'zehu tanur shel Achnai. This is the oven of Achnai. My Achnai, in what sense is it like Achnai? Achnai means a snake. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, shehikifu dvarim ka'achna. Zu. They surrounded it with their, like a snake, with their arguments. V'timehu declared it impure. Tana, it was taught. Bo'to hayom hashiv Rabbi Eliezer kol tshuvot sheba'olam v'kilo kiblu heimenu. On that day, Rabbi Eliezer gave all of the answers in the world and they didn't accept them. Eventually, he says, "Im halacha kamoti charuv ze yochiach. If the law is like me, let that tree out there prove it. The tree uproots itself and moves a great distance." They say to him, "Ein mevi'in raya min acharuv." You can't bring a proof like that. Okay, says Chazal v'amar lehem, "Im halacha kamoti, let the water outside prove it." And suddenly, in the stream, the river outside, the water starts flowing in the opposite direction. Amrulah, they say, "Ein mevi'in raya me'emet amayim." You can't bring that sort of proof. He says, if the halacha is like me, let the walls of the Bet Midrash prove it, and the walls of the Bet Midrash start to cave in. Ga'al bahem, Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua jumps up and shouts at them and says, if the sages are arguing here and you collapse on them, then what's your point? Lo nafnu mipnei kvodo shel Rabbi Yoshua, v'lo zakfu mipnei kvodo shel Rabbi Eliezer. They didn't fall out of honor of Rabbi Yoshua. And straighten out of honor of Rabbi Eliezer. Adayin matin v'omdim. They're still inclined there today. Rabbi Eliezer comes back to them and says, "Im halacha kamoti, if the law is like me, min hashamayim yochichu. Let the heavens prove it." Yatzta bat kol v'amra. A heavenly voice comes down and declares, "Malachem etzel Rabbi Eliezer. Who are you to argue with Rabbi Eliezer? Halacha kamota b'kol makom. The law is like him in every place." Amad Rabbi Yoshua al Raglav, Rabbi Yoshua stands on his legs and says, Lo bashamayim hi. The Torah is not in heaven. That's a verse in the end of Devarim. What spin does he put on it? My lo bashamayim hi, Amar Rabbi Yirmiya shekvar nitna Torah mahar Sinai. The Torah has already been given. Ein anu mashgichin babat kol. We no longer listen to a heavenly voice. It's written in your Torah, Acharei Rabim La'atot, incline after the majority. You could not have any better line for the Rabbi Akiva school than that one we just said. Rabbi Yoshua is one of Rabbi Akiva's teachers. Lo b'shamayim hi. It's no longer in heaven. Moshe comes down, right, and sits at the back of the classroom and feels sick. It's no longer in heaven. It is now with us. We're not going to accept these supernatural proofs. We're also not going to accept all of these claims to tradition. Seemingly, we're not even going to accept heaven's voice. Ashkechei Rabbi Natan le'Eliyahu. Once, Rabbi Natan lives a long time later, Rabbi Natan met Elijah. And he asks him, "My avid kutsha brichu b'ha'hishata.
What was Hashem doing at that time? Amar le kachayich. Hashem was laughing. He was saying, Nitzchuni banai, Nitzchuni banai. My children have defeated me. My children have defeated me. What else can Nitzchuni mean?
Laugh.
Hmm?
Laugh.
No?
Champion.
Sorry?
Champion.
Could be championed. One, like they've beaten me. They've defeated me. Nun Sadichet. Very good. Exactly. I heard this as a vort, and then I found it in the writings of Rabbi Yechiel Miparis in the 12th century. Nitzchuni banai, my children have defeated me. Nitzchuni banai, my children have made me eternal. Boom. Isn't that beautiful? Hashem is laughing. Because what he has seen is that after this most terrible moment of Churban HaBayit, where, as we have seen, you would have good reason to think that Judaism is now over, my children have found a way of making me eternal. Not through the Rabbi Eliezer approach of we just say what our teachers heard, but through the Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Akiva approach of Lo B'Shamayim Hi, of creativity, of convincing one another with logical arguments. These two midrashim that we saw, which sort of lift up this argument from being one of just educational methodology to being one of theology, and what direction do they go in? This is the clash, and this is the moment in which the Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Akiva school wins. And if so, no space anymore for Rabbi Eliezer. Amru, they said, Oto hayom, have you called taharot shetiher Rabbi Eliezer v'salfum be'esh? They brought all of the cases which Rabbi Eliezer had declared pure, and they burnt them. They got rid of his opinion. They declared them tamei v'nimnu alav v'birchu, and they excommunicated him. Amru, they said, mi yolech v'yodiyo, who will go and let him know? Amar lehem, Rabbi Akiva ani elech. Rabbi Akiva goes. He plays a significant role here. V'nimtza machriv et kol ha'olam. He says, I better go. If someone who's not careful goes, they'll destroy the whole world. He sits there and he tells him very gently, Zalgu einav d'ma'ot. Rabbi Eliezer's eyes fill with tears. Lakah ha'olam shlish b'zeitim, shlish b'chitim, shlish b'sa'orim. Third of all the crops in the world are destroyed, as Rabbi Eliezer sort of accepts his defeat. Tana ach gadol ha'tabayom. It was taught even more on that day. Every place where Rabbi Eliezer looked was burnt, a bit like the Shir on Shabbat. Rabban Gamliel, who is the head of the academy, who hasn't appeared in the Shir until now, was on a ship. A great wave arises, threatens to drown him as this takes place. Rabbi Gamliel understands why this is happening. Amad al raglav, he stands on his legs, just like Rabbi Yehoshua stood on his legs. Ribono shel olam, master of the universe. Galui v'yadu alafanecha, it's known to you, shelo lichvodi asiti, I didn't do this out of my own honor, this excommunication. Lo lichtofod beit abba asiti, didn't do it for my house's honor. El lichvodecha, I did it for your honor, shelo yubu machloket b'Yisrael. That there shouldn't be more machloket in Israel, and the sea calms. Then we get to the end of the story. Ima Shalom. Who is Ima Shalom? What a name. Mother of Peace. Unlucky for her, she is Rabbi Eliezer's wife and Rabbi Gamliel's sister. Awkward.
Whoa.
Mahahu Masa Ve'elech, from that moment on, from that day on, Lohea Shavkel Rabbi Eliezer Lamei Palalape. She would not let him put his head down for Tachanun. Every day he'd get to Tachanun, she would interrupt him. One time, she forgets to. Why? Hahu yomer reshiarche havi. It was Rosh Chodesh. V'ich lefla be'malei lachaser. She got confused if it was one day or 2 days. She thought it was 2 day Rosh Chodesh, and so she had a break. No Tachanun. She had a break from needing to disrupt her husband. There are those who say, Ata Anya Vakaya Bava, there was a poor man at the gate, Afika Le Rifta, she took him out some bread. Either way, Ashkachte, she comes back, to Nafal al Anfe, she sees him fallen on his firm, saying, Tachanun. Amrale, she screams at him, Kum, get up! Katib Tla Achi, you've killed my brother. Adahachi napak shipur amibet Rabbi Gamliel d'shachi. For that moment, Rabbi Gamliel dies. Amarla, he says to him, minayadat, how did you know? Amrale, she says to him, kach mekubalni mibet Abba. This was the tradition I received. Kol ha'sha'arim ninalim chutz mishare ona. All of the gates of heaven are closed after the destruction of the temple, except those who have been wronged. Ona. That is the full story. What is this story about? Now here's why I've got a cruel joke to play on you. I now have a 6-page source sheet to give out to all of you. This is true. Not staying for Tikkun Lel? No?
The skull needs sleep.
I reckon we'll get through this in 15 minutes. Okay? Listen, this is the... Listen, I'm... Huh?
Or
for CUNY,
CUNY
Tevra. Okay, I'm going to put a pause in the recording at this point. Think tomorrow. Okay. Right. Goodbye. This recording. We're going to start another one. Then.